One game down. One game out of 272. I know that we're supposed to care so passionately about all the scores in week number one. And yes, because it's the NFL and there are only 17 games per team, every game counts. But I'm just so happy that football is back, real football, games and scores that matter, that right now I'm just basking in that glow from Los Angeles and SoFi Stadium that Von Miller just called the best stadium in the NFL. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Do you need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. The Buffalo Bills survive four turnovers, four takeaways by the Los Angeles Rams. They post more than 400 offensive yards, and Josh Allen, Chuck and Doug, baby.
Shotgun snap. They rush four, moving up. Allen cocks his arm, throws long on the run, wide open, falling down, catch. Goal line, digs. Touchdown! Touchdown! What a throw by Allen, and a falling down catch by Diggs. 53 yards, and the Bills go up 30-10.
Stafford takes, looks, fires one into the end zone. It is incomplete. Incomplete, intended for Robinson and broken up by the rookie Benford. He had terrific position, and he broke up the pass. The Bills take over on downs. There's just 41 seconds left. And let the party begin here in Los Angeles and back home in Buffalo.
Kevin Harlan on Westwood One and then John Murphy, the radio voice of the Buffalo Bills. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. What is the After Hours game of the week? The poll is up on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page. And no, we're not slighting you and your team if it's not in the poll. We only get four options on Twitter, and believe you me, it's difficult and challenging to pick one every week. At least we don't have to worry about including Bills and Rams because it's already in the books. And to give us the scene set and the Rams reaction from Los Angeles, our friend Michael Duarte, who covers all things sports in LA for NBC LA. Michael, I got to ask, how do the Rams make this the actual Rams house? Because that is the hashtag on Twitter. And yet it certainly does seem like all the big games that the Rams play in their own stadium, their brand new SoFi Stadium, that there are just as many loud fans for the opposing teams.
Yeah. Hi, Amy, and welcome back from your little vacation and visiting your mom. I'm glad to have you back on air. And I would say that the Rams house mantra, rallying cry, if you want to call it, that they do here at SoFi Stadium is probably one of the worst in sports, right? First of all, you share the stadium, so it's not just your house. The Chargers call this home as well. And especially on the NFL season opener on Thursday Night Football, it was a Bills takeover. And they took over the house and robbed you of all of your things and left you stranded with the cupboards bare, so to speak. So I thought it was at least 50-50 Bills fans to Rams fans. And I started telling everybody in the press box, my cohorts on the local television affiliates here, wait until, you know, that final touchdown where they went up 31-10 is scored, and we can now watch all the Rams fans here in L.A. head for the exits. And now we'll really get a chance to see how many Bills fans there were, because honestly, the Rams blue and the Bills blue is a very similar blue, so we couldn't really tell who was who just looking at the stadium. But once the blowout was on and we saw the Rams fans head for the exits, you really got to see the Bills Mafia in full support and just how well they traveled, which I was very impressed by myself.
How do the Rams react to that, to having such a loud presence for opponents in their own stadium?
Great question. It's one question I actually asked Matthew Stafford myself after the game. How do they prepare for it? They actually do. They believed, knowing that the Bills are one of those teams that travel very well, a la the San Francisco 49ers, who also travel very well to SoFi Stadium. And I'm sure there's a few other fan bases out there that we could mention that travel well when it comes to L.A. The thing that you mentioned, and you said it in the tease, right? And I will take Von Miller a step further. This isn't the greatest stadium in the NFL. It's the greatest stadium arguably in the world, especially when you're talking about the technology involved. The money that went into it, $5-6 billion, and just the weather, when you factor in the weather of Southern California, the proximity to the beach, the proximity to LAX, the fact that you have a beautiful sunset here in the summer in Los Angeles with planes flying overhead. We've had a heat wave here, Amy. So, you know, the Rams offense was just as inconsistent as the weather, but it wasn't that hot today. It was like the one day the temperature dropped about 10, 15 degrees. And so to answer your question, they're prepared for fans to travel well. They were prepared for the Bills Mafia to travel well and be breaking some of those plastic tables in the parking lot during the tailgate. So what they did was all week in practice, they practiced a silent count. It's similar to what they did in the Super Bowl. It's similar to what they do when they travel on the road in hostile environments, like they are traveling to New Orleans later this year. I'm sure they'll use that silent count in New Orleans. And they did it in the against the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC Championship as well. So they were prepared for it, and they had to switch to that silent count early in this game as the Bills fans got louder, and especially late in the game once the Bills started to really take over and the rout was on.
Michael Duarte of NBC LA is with us post-season opener for the NFL at the home of the Super Bowl champion Rams. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Have you had a chance to hold one of those Super Bowl rings?
I have had a chance. We had Jacobs Jewelers who came in and did the ring. They came into our station and let us all see it and put it on. Now, I will say we didn't get a player's ring. We got an executive's ring to kind of show around. So I heard the players are even bigger than the ring that we got to see. And a couple people today in the press box, people I haven't seen the last 7 months since the Super Bowl, showed me their rings, people who worked for the Rams, a little bit smaller, but still impressive nonetheless. I'm surprised they're wearing them because that's something I would put in a safe deposit box or something or lock in a safe. That is a very expensive ring. It is very big. It weighs your hand down. But it's beautiful. And another cool thing today was seeing the Rams championship banner unveiled. And the Rams even went the extra mile in having another banner made up for their 1999 championship when they were the then St. Louis Rams. Those banners will now live adjacent to each other side by side in the south side of the stadium forever, supposedly. And I just wonder what the Chargers are going to do here this Sunday if those banners will stay up while they're playing the Raiders in their home opener.
That is funny, but it's what happens, right? You have to share stadiums. Well, you can't take down everything when you flip it. So that's interesting. The Rams obviously are a team that's got a bunch of moving parts. And even as they kick off the season, you know, they're missing a couple of guys because of injuries. They hope to get back. It was fascinating, though, to see Andrew Whitworth there with the Vince Lombardi trophy and an Odell Beckham Jr. standing right next to him in pregame. Did you know he was there or was going to be there?
I had no clue he was going to be there, but I was actually on the field when he walked out, and I didn't get him fast enough, but I got my phone ready and followed him a little bit. So there's some video on my Instagram, I think on Twitter, it's on my TikTok as well, of Odell Beckham Jr. Hugging Matthew Stafford. That was the first time they saw each other before the game.
Wow.
And so I have that. And the other interesting thing here, Amy, is I would guess that Odell Beckham Jr., once he's fully healthy and ready to return this season, probably after the bye week, I'm looking at maybe week 8 or 9, similar to when he was cut by the Browns and signed with the Rams as a free agent last year, that these are the two teams at the top of his list. We know Von Miller, his best buddy who recruited him to the Rams, is now on the Bills, trying to recruit him to the Bills. And he tweeted out after the game just how impressive the Bills Mafia looked with their fans and just how the Bills looked on the field. And he must have been impressed with what he saw from Josh Allen and the passes he was throwing to those receivers like Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis. And then you look at the Rams, who have a locker at their practice facility in Thousand Oaks for Odell Beckham Jr. It is still there. His nameplate is on it. They have jerseys and stuff in there. They are waiting for his return. And I'm sure guys were recruiting him tonight. And there he was with the Lombardi Trophy doing the banner unveiling. So these are the two teams I think at some point, one of the two he'll be deciding between, and I think he'll end up on one of these two. Probably the Rams, if you look at tonight as far as who needs a receiver. But speaking of Andrew Whitworth, they definitely could have used him tonight, Amy, because this yes. game, in my opinion, was decided in the trenches. Matthew Stafford sacked 7 times, the most he's ever been sacked as a member of the Rams, and I think the most since like his early 2018 season with the Detroit Lions. So that is not a number that the Rams want to see their quarterback, especially with his ailing elbow, on the turf all that much. So they definitely could have used Andrew Whitworth and Odell Beckham Jr., in my opinion, on the field tonight.
We know OBJ loves to be loved. He loves to be courted. He loves to be the center of attention. So no doubt he's going to milk this for all it's worth. All it's worth.
I saw there's actually a nightclub at SoFi Stadium on the south side of the stadium in the corner of the end zone. It's called Bootsy Bellows. It's an actual club that's here in Hollywood as well. And they cut to the cameras, and then you're probably not going to be surprised to see Odell Beckham Jr. partying in that club during the game with a lot of people around him. So that didn't surprise me yet.
Michael Duarte from Los Angeles following the NFL season opener. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. I saw the tweet that you retweeted from Cooper Kupp. Reflect, rectify, respond. This is not a situation the Rams have been in under Sean McVay. First time they've ever lost the season opener. What do they have to say about what they do now or where they go from here?
Great question, Amy. And I expected there to be more excuses than a John Gruden apology at the end of this game.
Michael!
But they weren't. It was all Sean McVay taking on full responsibility. A word I saw many players say in the post-game comments. I'm talking about Jalen Ramsey, who very frankly said we got our butts beat, and not in those same words I just used. But from Cooper Kupp to Bobby Wagner to Matthew Stafford to Sean McVay, everybody said it was humbling. This was a humbling experience. And when you're the champs, when you're coming off of a historic season and winning it on your field and all the dreams come true, to be beaten like this in your home stadium on the night that your banner was unveiled and the last time you probably would celebrate that championship run from last year, to be beaten this badly, it definitely was a wake-up call. I also tweeted out, because I was standing right next to it, the locker room and the press conference room were literally sharing a wall. They're right next to each other. I heard Sean McVay go in there and lay into his team.
Really?
He vowed. I can't repeat what he said because I don't have that many expletives in my vocabulary, but there was a lot of them. But what I can tell you I heard, and I heard him say, is he promised them this will never happen again. He promised them this kind of loss like this would never happen again, the way that they didn't prepare. He didn't feel like Sean McVay didn't feel like he had his team prepared. He didn't feel like he felt like he was outcoached by Sean McDermott. So all of these things he took ownership for. And like I said, everybody really felt like this was a truly humbling experience for them. Like we mentioned, I think they got to fix this on the offensive and defensive line. I think they were not prepared for the pressure the Bills were able to put on them with a four-man front. Led by Von Miller, of course, who may have some inside information because he went against that O-line a lot in practice last year and may have been able to pass that on to his teammates now with the Bills. The biggest takeaway I saw, and I saw a stat online, Amy, was Josh Allen got rid of the ball in 2.37 seconds on average. And that's including the times, you know, he carried and then was outside the pocket and made plays with his feet, whereas Matthew Stafford held on the ball too long. And a lot of those sacks he took of those seven we mentioned, I think, could have been avoidable had he gotten rid of the ball quicker. And so that's one big thing that I'm looking at, the trenches right here on both offensive and defensive line where the Rams need to improve moving forward.
Out of curiosity, was the press room full when Sean McVay was going on his initial tirade?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I would say most of us tried to go against the wall and literally put our ear against the wall to hear it. And I was actually told, please go take your seat. Stop eavesdropping on Sean McVay's post-game speech, if you want to call it. It was more of a tirade, of a chewing out, but also like of him taking responsibility for
yes.
it. And we heard all the cliches in the book once he went to the podium after that. He has to be better. He needs to have his team more prepared. And he takes full ownership for the loss, and he wears it. And we're talking about a guy who entering this game, Amy, was a perfect 5-0 in season openers in his
right.
tenure as the Rams head coach. And this was his first ever season opening loss. And there's one thing that was interesting about that stat, right? So entering this game, that's five straight years they won the opener. And we know Sean McVay famously doesn't play any of his starting players in the preseason. But I can tell you that a lot of guys looked incredibly rusty out there tonight, including the offensive line of the Rams, not prepared to block that Bills front four, including Jalen Ramsey, who, you know, is coming off of off-season shoulder surgery. He really didn't get a lot of reps. He's probably still working himself back into game shape. Obviously, he didn't even play at all in the preseason, but he really didn't even play in training camp or in practice or anything. So he's really not up to it. And I saw a stat where he got in times that he was targeted by Josh Allen, he was targeted seven times, six of those were completions for 124 yards and two touchdowns. I know two of them were big plays, but Jalen Ramsey got exposed tonight.
Mm. I love Michael Duarte for many reasons, but one of them has got to be the fact that he will stand on a wall with his ear next to it to hear what's happening. This is how you get the real inside information.
That's true.
Fantastic. I love it. Okay, before I let you go, I genuinely do not know the answer to this. I know if there is an answer, you will have it. What's bigger right now? Is it the Dodgers and their enormous lead atop the NL West and all of their World Series aspirations, or is it Rams starting off defense of their title?
That's a great question. Right now, I'd have to say it's the heat wave because it has most fans here in Los Angeles avoiding anywhere where they have to be outside in triple-digit heat. But since the Dodgers, in my opinion, are about a week away here from clinching.
Yeah, what's their magic number now?
Their magic number six. And they are playing the team that's behind them. So if they were to sweep the Padres this weekend in San Diego, which I will be there, by the way, if you need anything, if they were to sweep the Padres, they will have clinched the NL West on Sunday. And that'll be their ninth division crown in the last 10 years. So I think once that happens, Dodger fans will really get excited. I think that's going to be at the forefront. They have the best record in baseball. They are on pace to potentially shatter the franchise record in wins, and still the all-time MLB record is still within sight right now, though I don't think they'll get it, but it's definitely still in a possibility. They lead almost every offensive category in Major League Baseball, so fans are really hoping that this is the year they can do it, and they can kind of put all the people that talk about the bubble title to bed.
Mm. Interesting. I asked Michael not that long ago over a text when he ever takes time off. And the answer was, well, I didn't this year because the All-Star break was in LA. So no rest for you, Mike. I don't know how you do it. You're like the Energizer Bunny.
I'm like a MasterCard, Amy. I'm everywhere you want to be.
Oh, my gosh. How many times have you used that line?
Only a couple. I save it for your show.
Yes. First time on national radio. So find Michael on Twitter at Michael J. Duarte. He is award-winning for many reasons, like the fact that he'll put his ear to a wall to get inside info. Covers Dodgers and Rams and everything else for NBC LA. It's always good to talk to you, Mike. Stay cool out there.
You too, and give your animals a big hug for me.
I will do that. Now see another reason why Mike is our favorite. Good night, Mike.
Bye. Thanks, Amy.
So we don't always get this with our guests, but I love the fact that Mike always listens before he comes on the air and pays attention. And he also sends me gifts of Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump. So no one else does that. He's the best. All right. You've got the game of the week poll already up, already rocking on Twitter, A-Law Radio. And then on our Facebook page, too, we're getting lots of responses. It is kind of like riding a bike, though I'm sure I'm going to say something that doesn't fit the football vernacular at some point, simply because I have to remember my terms and remember that rhythm and find it again. But it's good to have football back and better than ever, we hope, right? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We'll make the most of our time together, aight?
Pleasure to speak with you. I always have a great time.
Huge fan. So glad to have a female voice on sports radio.
I love you. I love listening to your show.
Girl makes the rules around here.
You are absolutely right, Amy.
I listen to you every morning on my way to work, and I appreciate, as do millions of others, that you report like you do.
Love it when chicks call the show. Boom!
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Amy's taking your calls at 855-212-4CBS.
feels good, doesn't it? It feels good to have football back. And it's just the beginning. I say that, and I mean it with all of my heart, that I'm so excited to have football back. And then there are times when it feels so overwhelming as well, because I know what's coming. It's marathon Sundays into Mondays. And I've said it a bazillion times, I will say it again, working football Sunday nights is one of the reasons why I choose to stay in this time slot, why I choose to remain where I am. I've had opportunities to change time slots, and I do not want to give up Sunday nights during the NFL season. But they are chaotic, they are hectic, and they can be overwhelming. I'm really excited, though, that producer Jay has got a year under his belt, because this time last year he was just starting. What do you remember about this time last year and the fact that football was underway? And the thing is, you probably had no idea what you were in for. Like, none.
It was a lot. It was a little bit of a blur, because I was also at the same time as all this was going on, getting used to a new schedule, getting used to really working full time for the first time.
Getting used to me.
Yeah, you know, so it was a lot going on, but, you know, just kind of learned on the fly. Went well.
You think?
I do.
We won't tell him any different. We'll let him think that.
Let me take it.
Yeah. So we have to figure out our Survivor Island. Our office Survivor pool. I will say, for Survivor Island, I went with the Ravens over the Jets. I don't love it. I don't really know what to do about it, though, because right now we don't know what any of these teams are. I just know that the Jets don't have their starting quarterback, and they're starting Joe Flacco, and I don't know. It's going to be I don't think that if the Jets had Zach Wilson, even that this would be a game in which they'd be favored. But with Joe Flacco, he's got cinder blocks for feet, right? And he doesn't really know the Ravens that well anymore. He knows. Certainly knows a little of Lamar Jackson and knows John Harbaugh, but the team has turned over so much. But I worry, because the receiving core for the Ravens is extremely young and green. So that's my big scare. But that's the one I'm going with on Survivor Island. But what are we doing for our office pool?
I want to go with the Ravens one, but a part of it just seems like too easy.
Okay, great. Don't try to talk me out of this now.
Well, you brought it up last hour, how you said, if the Jets are going to win, a lot of us are going to be kicked off the island. And I think that's true, but now it's like out there in the world and it's in existence, so I'm getting a little tentative
to
make the pick.
You with your jinxes. Oh, my gosh. So let's just talk about what happened earlier, shall we? So Jay he's all excited about Josh Allen because, as I made fun of him yesterday on the show, he got really excited, overeager, and drafted Josh Allen in the third round of his fantasy draft. Late third round, because that makes a difference. Did I accurately say third round?
Yes.
Yeah, so third round. It wasn't that late. You were picking number 6, weren't you?
Okay, yeah.
In fact, it would be early third round if 6 out of 14 or whatever it is. Anyway. He picks him middle of the third round and initially is like jazzed up and then has buyer's remorse like right away. So, of course, when he looks like a genius after the season opener, even after the season opener, after the first quarter, he looks like a genius because Josh Allen completes his first 10 passes. He's already got a touchdown to Gabe Davis. He is like flying high, and by this I mean producer Jay, he is on cloud 9, and the second he sends me a text about how Josh Allen is crushing it, he throws an interception
literally within 3 minutes.
No, it was seconds. Well, by the time I read it, and so now this interception wasn't on Josh, it was a ball that went right through the hands of his receiver. I don't remember who it was, but right away I get this text back about how he jinxed it in all capital letters. Yes, Jay, because you had something to do with that receiver letting the ball go through his hands.
I put it out there, and what happened? Within seconds of me saying, oh, Josh Allen killing it, how smart do I look? Interception.
Well,
and then
I
another
said
one.
How you didn't toot your own horn. You just said Josh Allen's crushing it.
I wasn't slighting the pick anymore. I was basking
you're all
in
about it. Basking in the glow of Josh Allen.
But I can't say that anymore. No more texts like that. I mean, Josh Allen's doing well. I'm just going to let the universe keep Josh Allen doing well.
All right. So no more tuning your own horn is what you're saying.
Oh, I didn't say that.
I don't believe that for a second. So that does not explain the Survivor pool pick that we need. other than to say that you're nervous because you think it's too easy.
It seems
to
a little
pick
too
the Ravens
easy.
Over the Jets.
Seems a little too easy. Like,
so then where are we going instead?
I don't know yet. Maybe the Niners, but Trey Lance's first like start as an official starter scares me a little bit. Is he going to be ready week one?
Why is it that all of the teams that would seem to be quote-unquote easy, now remember it's the NFL, it's week one, there's no such thing as a cupcake anyway, all of the ones that seem to be easy are on the road. That's what makes me nervous. Philadelphia is in Detroit. San Francisco is in Chicago. Let's see. Green Bay is in Minnesota. Tampa, well, Dallas, that Dallas defense better show up. Denver's in Seattle. So all the teams that you would think would be heavily favored, the teams that are heavily favored, they're on the road. So
The one where I don't think that'll be much of an issue would be the Niners one there. I'm more afraid of
the quarterback. So you want to go with the Niners in Chicago?
A little bit. I just don't think the Bears are able to beat the Niners defense, so I don't think they're going to score many points, which is where I think Lance can do enough.
Marco, can you weigh in here?
The two that I would look at, I know you don't like the road games. It doesn't bother me as much. Denver and Seattle, I'd be stunned if the Seahawks won that game. I'd be stunned.
And I'd be off Survivor Island if they did.
I'd also be very, very surprised if the Texans can beat the Colts. Stunned.
Yeah. Oh, but also a game that is...
I get it. It's also inside. It's indoors. It's Colts. It's Matt Ryan's first game. I get it. You can have all this.
Yeah, we can go around and around and around.
Because it's the NFL and it's week one. The Colts and the Broncos, to me, would be two pretty easy plays.
Shay, how do you feel about the Colts in Houston?
I don't mind the Colts. See, I'm actually a big Davis Mills fan. I think he's
But the Colts defense is...
No, the Colts should handle them pretty... With that said, yeah, they should beat them pretty handily.
Do you Survivor pools, Marco? Sorry, Jay, I didn't mean to
cut you off. I don't have one this year. I've done them before. Yeah, no, I've never won one, so I'm not the guy to ask, but I've gotten pretty far a few
times. I've never been past week six.
No, I got into like, there was one year that I got to that, like, there was four of us left, and it was week 15 or something like that.
So special.
And that's when I was basically out of teams. There was nothing left.
Right.
I rolled the dice and came up with nothing.
Week
and I think
15?
The other three, yeah, the other three won. They wound up tied. They won all three of them. So I was the only one that went out, and that was it.
Oh, my gosh.
So that sucked. Yeah, I'm
not
going to lie.
That's amazing. Jay, what's the farthest you've ever been?
I really haven't done them for that long. Maybe only 2 years I've been doing the Survivor League. Last year, I got to week three in our after-hours Survivor pool. And the year before that, maybe like week six or five, something like that. Really
six
not that far.
Is the farthest I've ever been. I'm so
now,
stressed.
Mind you,
I
also got bounced in week one before.
Oh, yeah. Multiple times I've been bounced in week one. I'm trying to think. Oh, Seattle. A couple years ago, I have to remember who they were playing. They bounced me in week number one. So, yeah, that's definitely happened. Oh, the Saints. Remember when the Saints lost to, who did they lose to a couple of years ago in the season opener? Oh, shoot, I forgot who
that
it was.
That sounds very, very familiar, though, yes.
Maybe it was the Buccaneers, but it was Jameis Winston's Buccaneers. I can't remember who it was, but I the Saints and the Seahawks have both gotten me in week number one.
Speaking of the Saints at Atlanta, that's another potential one.
No.
The Falcons can beat the Saints?
No, we don't know. I have no idea. Dennis Allen, Jameis Winston's coming off a torn ACL. I don't know. He's the king of interceptions when he wants to be. So, no. Plus, what about Michael Thomas? I don't know. No.
All right, we'll rule that one out.
Okay. I dare you to pick the Panthers over the Browns.
I was just looking at that one, actually. Scintillating.
I dare you.
The one thing I'll say is, look, and we've all been guilty of this, don't just automatically go to the home team.
Right.
Find the best
That's
matchup.
That's true.
I'm trying.
So, like I said, leaning toward the Ravens, but I like the Colts. That's a good one.
I'm just, and also throwing it out there, because, I mean, when we talk about home field advantage, again, I realize I'm the guy that's always piling on. Is the 12 really going to make up for the fact that Geno Smith is your quarterback? I mean, really? Is that one false start penalty because you were able to get loud for 5 seconds is really going to make up for Geno Smith and the barrage of mistakes that he's going to make? I find it difficult to believe.
Okay.
Especially hard to get loud when you suck.
Well, I think they're actually going to be happy to see Russell Wilson, maybe. I mean, he got traded.
I think they're going to boom.
Really?
I didn't for a long time, but the last week or so, with the both sides going back and forth, and, you know, they wanted to trade me and all this stuff, it seems like Russell Wilson's going out of his way to kind of put the stamp on his previous stop, and I think Seattle fans are tired of it now. I think they're now starting to get annoyed with Russell Wilson. Well, it's almost like the look, the wound is a little fresh. He's throwing a little salt in it. And then when you see Geno Smith lead you out to the field, I think they're going to be a little salty.
The fact is they're already cranky because of what their team's going to look like
and
in the NFC West.
Yes. Rightfully so.
Okay, so maybe that game, except there's a personal element to it, of course. So we'll think about that, but we have a little time. You all have time when it comes to Survivor Island, but not too much time. So I would suggest you hop to it, peeps. Find the link on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, on our Facebook page. While you're there, vote for the After Hours game of the week. I do love the smack talking that's kind of veiled even as we head into week number one, where there are little undercurrents going on here, there, and everywhere.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will pivot just a tad. Someone asked me my favorite Friends episode of all time as part of Ask Amy Anything this week, and all I responded with, in all caps, of course, was pivot! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. we will pivot just a little bit because there are a couple baseball storylines that I want to throw out there, but we will not stray from football very long. I would love to talk to you about what's on the schedule this weekend. So our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Of course, it's also week two of the college football season. Well, it's technically, I guess, depending on how you count them. Some people start with week zero when the very first games kick off, which would mean week one and week two follow that. Technically, this would be the third weekend with college football games, but the second, full weekend in which we've had the majority of the teams in action. So count however you would like to count. But there's also a lot of college football coming up, including Alabama and Texas. When I was in Houston last weekend, I went to church with my mom and her husband. And depending upon who you ask, it's either Texas A&M country, because they're not that far from College Station, not even an hour from College Station, where my mom lives, or the church is even closer to it than that, or they're Texas fans, which you're going to get those all over the state, of course, all over the Lone Star State. And so I happened to be speaking to a guy. My mom introduced me to him, and he kind of knew what I did for a living. And I just mentioned that it was my busy season. I was getting ready to dive into football. And he said, "Oh, yeah, how do you think Texas is going to do against Alabama next weekend?" And so I kind of hid my face a little bit behind my hand, just like, I don't think the Longhorns are quite there yet. I think that they've had so much transition over the last couple of years that it's been really hard for them to find any consistency. I even said to him, how many head coaches have they had since Mac Brown departed? And that's been kind of the issue. I tell you all the time, in sports, constant change equals constant losing. And that's been the case for the Texas Longhorns. They're kind of going through this cycle where they just can't seem to find the right formula, or yes, just as importantly, they don't stick with any coach or any system long enough to know if it is the right formula. So now it's Steve Sarkisian, who of course comes from Alabama, has his time under Nick Saban, and you've got, once again, Saban playing against one of his former coaches, and generally his track record is impeccable. Not always. Lost to Georgia in the national championship game, so not always, but now it's Tide versus Longhorns, not Saban versus Sark.
You never know what a horse can pull until you give him a heavy load. So we obviously have a huge challenge, pretty heavy load in terms of playing on the road against a good team. And I think everybody needs to understand, if you're going to pull the load, you got to prepare the right way. You got to work the right way. You can't make mental errors. Got to be able to stay focused when you're playing on the road. Got to overcome, you know, their emotion, their intensity, the crowd, all kinds of challenges. So we'll kind of see what we're ready to pull when we go out there and play on Saturday.
That's an early game. Alabama kicks off in Austin against Texas at 11 o'clock in the morning Central Time. So it's a noon Eastern Time start, nationally televised on Fox, but it's an earlier game for these college teams who have to be out there on the field long before kickoff at 11. So it's another weekend of college football. I think that the once we get those marquee matchups, the matchups with the ranked teams facing each other, like Ohio State, Notre Dame, like Georgia and Oregon, though it didn't turn out to be a competitive game. A lot of times now in this second and third week, so the second and third weeks of non-conference, you'll see fewer ranked teams facing each other. It's not going to be the case everywhere, only that generally most teams don't schedule three ranked opponents in a row if they have aspirations going to the college football playoff. But we do have Baylor on the road at BYU, and Baylor is ranked in the top 10 initially. And then there was another game I saw too. Oh, Florida. That's right. Florida is hosting Kentucky. You remember how Florida started out its season. So there will be some intriguing matchups. No doubt there will also be some upsets. Last weekend was, well, it was drama like it always is in college football. And of course the news coming really filtering. We're getting it piecemeal, but filtering in that there will in fact be an expanded playoff. They're shooting for 2024. Is the latest that I heard. There were a bunch of commissioners who were speaking on Thursday when they were, I think they got together for a big powwow outside the Dallas airport, and we're talking about the options and how to get all the details worked out before they get to 2024 so they can expand the playoffs. So there's that undertone to college football right now. But it's not just that, right? It's the NIL. It's the fact that you've had so many players change teams, the transfer portal, all of that. And then you generally have the same teams that are on top of the rankings, even though the preseason rankings don't mean a whole lot. But right now they're debating about revenue. I'm sure you're shocked to hear that, and how they would schedule, what the different models look like for the newly expanded college football playoff. At the very latest, it will start in 2026, but they're hoping, of course, because of revenue, that they will kick off after the 2024 regular season. Get this, $1.6 billion would be the payout for the 12-team field, according to CBS Sports. $1.6 billion would be divvied up with the revenue models that they're working out right now for the 12-team field. No wonder they want to kick it off as soon as possible. That's total insanity. But if you have any concerns, forget, that's the wrong word, not concerns. If you have any questions that maybe the commissioners are doing it out of the goodness of their heart because they're also college football fans and they think this would be really good for their sport, think again. That is not why the commissioners are getting together and agreeing to expand the playoff. No, it's because these games get massive TV ratings, because the games are cash cows. They can charge huge advertising dollars for sponsors and corporate partners to be part of these games. It's one of those, the more the merrier, similar model to what the NFL uses. If 16 regular season games is good, well, 17 is better. If two wild card games in each conference is good, well, three is better. If playing on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday is good, well, playing on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday is better. Trust me, it's all about real estate. It's all about greed and gobbling up as much as you can on the calendar and as many huge TV dates as you possibly can. So, college football and the NFL, they're back, baby. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.